Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode. We have a guest on that has the most interesting line of work. If you ever wanted to be a private investigator, we have Craig Smith on, and that's his line of work. I met him during the sports ISAO that we were doing for the Olympic Games with the Colorado Guard as a partner, and he came in and was doing some online manhunts basically for some of the things we were coming up with. So Craig, welcome today. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
And this very interesting when the things that you were showing me and talking to me about that you do in the virtual world to track people down. And I thought our listeners would really love to hear some of those things that we really don't get much of an introduction to because they're kind of behind the scenes so often. But that's some of the stuff you did. Let me ask you first, give your background. Where do you come from? What's your education, training? What were you like as a little kid, I guess? Might be something. But just so people have a connection with what you do and how do you got to doing what you do now?
Yeah, so I grew up in Western New York, Buffalo, and went in the Army at 17, did 4 years and 11 months, did a shorter tour in Iraq, right around 9 or 10 months, came home and used my voc rehab and GI Bill to get my bachelor's degree. So my bachelor's is in intelligence studies with a minor in the Arabic language. And, you know, I did some work in the intelligence community. It was internships, but it was just real life projects.
So tell us about the school you went to was Mercyhurst, right?
That's right. Yeah. Mercyhurst University. Well, back then it was Mercyhurst College.
A little bit about that too.
So, yeah. So the Mercyhurst has this amazing program, research intelligence. It's called RIAP. And I mean, it's an absolute hardcore program. 4 years, intense studies. First year, a freshman year, we were doing 50-page intelligence reports. I interviewed a Tunisian ambassador. If you dropped below a 3.0, you got put on probation or you got kicked out of the program. You had to learn a foreign language. I mean, it was really, really tough. So, and, you know, our instructors were former agency, FBI, I believe DOD, or Department of State. So it was, we had various alphabet agencies recruiting on campus. So. Mm-hmm.
So now, that being your background, this is kind of a world that a lot of people don't see, don't understand. Most of the people get trained out of there, go straight to CIA, FBI. You don't hear them out in the public too much. But how does that relate to what you do now?
Sorry, 1 second. I'm doing surveillance. I think my target's moving. Oh, no, it's not him. Anyway, sorry about that. So I was actually hired through a contract, a government contractor right out of college, hired for the client, which was an alphabet agency, and did the polygraph and everything. Ended up not taking the job when it was all said and done. And then I ended up working for Chris Roberts' organization, One World Labs. And that's really where I had my offensive skills honed. I don't know if you read about him, but he's the individual that allegedly hacked the airplane in flight and flew it sideways. So we definitely did a lot of interesting things there with open source intelligence collection and being offensive in the cybersecurity cycle.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So we definitely did a lot of interesting things there with open source intelligence collection and being offensive in the cybersecurity cycle.
Okay, so now explain what that means to someone that would have no idea.
Right, so cybersecurity, I think, is typically like, I mean, they might say it's offensive, but it's like defensive, like, you know, firewalls, this, that, you know, how do we protect the bombardment? What I do is I'm offensive, so I go out and I collect open source intelligence on known entities, bad actors, use different tools to target people, individuals, organizations that might want to attack whoever the client is. So, or also doing open source intelligence collection on general targets that are using the internet as, you know, one time I did a project in the Middle East against someone who threatened a dignitary, and I had to collect, try to get what's called attribution, where we try to figure out who the individual is, you know, when they're hiding behind a profile.
So how hard is that? That's something I saw over and over again, where in the virtual world, it's so hard to connect an actual person to what's going on.
Yeah, attribution is, you know, pretty tough, you know, because you can use like a Proton mail account or an encrypted email account or just a fake email account and hide behind, you know, a Facebook account. You know, that's how ISIS gets away with, you know, so much online on Twitter. But, you know, with that said, with attribution, how do I phrase this correctly? One of the best ways that, you know, we can get attribution is by, we use certain tools, laced links and different things like that, where we can send, you know, maybe a link to someone, get an IP address. And then from there, you can turn that over to, you know, the telecom provider of that country. And then hopefully they can use that IP address to, you know, hone in on the target.
So you're actually talking about using a phishing attack pointed against somebody you're trying to get information on.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we're, you know, I mean, some of those tools have SQL injection and different things like that. There's an amazing group out there called Packet Ninjas, and they have some amazing, amazing tools for offensive capabilities.
But so, anybody, you know, yeah,
sending
use
out, a,
those,
sending
right?
out a laced link or something like that.
But anybody could use those. I mean, the bad guys could use these tools that you're using, right?
They could. I don't think it's, I mean, they could. Yeah, I guess they could. I guess they could code their own stuff.
Yeah. So the service you were talking about, the what was it? Something Ninja?
Packet Ninjas is the name of the company that they have some amazing products. I don't know if you want me to list them, but they have an amazing product called OI Monitor that basically monitors the whole internet for keywords. Yeah. They have Alias DB, where they have all these, they have basically a complete database of all bad actors. Their OI Monitor archived paste bin back to like 2010. I mean, every single paste. So if you're using those,
if somebody uses them for some bad activity, do they keep track of who uses it? So they could say, hey, if somebody used our site to get some information on that person and they were really a stalker, we can turn over their information because they paid with a credit card to get our product?
Well, Packet Ninjas is a company that's absolutely wired tight, and they would never let anybody use their products that was a bad actor. So, and plus the products are so expensive, there's no way that anyone but a business could use it. So, I mean,
But I mean, I'm sure there's a business model somewhere in the world where there's a bad actor behind the business that's using the tools. Is there a way to track it?
I mean, if somebody's using these tools, or not their tools, but if somebody created their own tools, I mean, I guess there's a way to track it. Yeah. But
yeah,
I mean, yeah, that's a bit of an outlier, I think.
Okay. Well, I want to know, you were walking through the process you used to kind of find somebody. When you start out, give us like an interesting example about a process you used to find somebody online, somebody virtually.
Right. So the first thing I do is I just go through like my basic Google rounds, because, you know, sometimes you can hit a target like straight away just through Google, and you don't even need to like use all this exotic stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you have their email address, bonus if you have their phone number, and bonus if you have a social media profile. So like, let's say, for example, they have a Facebook profile, but we don't know who they are. Well, you look up at the URL, you try to get a username. People use multiple usernames across multiple platforms on the internet. So you just start doing Boolean searches, quote unquote, for this username. You start doing that with the email. You do different variations of email. If they gave you one that's a Gmail, you start plugging in Yahoo and Hotmail, you know, and you start just playing with all these searches.
So you're hoping that they use the same name, username on several accounts.
That's right. Or that alias that they're using or anything like that. So then beyond that, then if they have a website, then you try, then there's always like Google Dorks to see, or, you know, it's called Google Dorks. You always try to see if there's like, you try to see if that web, if Google has archived anything from that website. Because basically Google archives everything like without regard. Right. So if someone has a directory out there that they left open, Google archive it, and you can search out to find that archive.
So you can go back in time and say something that was taken down from a website might have been archived by Google.
Maybe not even archived. Maybe it's still active and Google ingested it and you can just search it out, but you have to use a Google Dork, you know, like, you know, one of, or like an FTP, you know, maybe they have their FTP open, Google ingest.
File transfer protocol. So that's just for transferring files. Go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, so like, you know, there's a certain Google Dork that you can use. It's like, you know, 20 some characters long, and you can search just specifically FTPs on Google. So, you know, and then beyond that, so let's say the Google search, let's say I get some intelligence from that, then you can start plugging things into Multigo.
Multigo. Now, what's that do?
Yeah. Multigo is made by Paterva. It's a company out of South Africa. I met them at DEF CON one year. Really nice guys. And, I mean, basically, you can run you can download Paterva for free. Or, I'm sorry, Multigo for free. Mm-hmm. And basically, what would have taken somebody maybe weeks, if not months, to do, you can do in about 30 seconds on Multigo. You just... It'll pull DNS, who is, related IP.
Now, what are those two things? DNS, explain those two things, DNS and who is.
Well, I mean, like the who is, for example, is just going to show.
Well, that's a website, though, that you can determine who's registered a certain URL with, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It'll pull the IP address of where the server is located, what kind of mail provider they're using. And then you can take that, and then you can just keep going, and then you can just harvest more and harvest more. And then if you have,
and also you said before you go on, you said the DNS is the domain name server, or service, and that tells you what IP, what internet number is related to a domain name.
Yeah, and then you can see, like, are they, you know, do they have subdomains? And you can start to harvest off their subdomains, and then you can find FTPs, and then you can just start creating this network. And if you have, once again, one of Packet Ninja's products is called SocialNet. You can plug in an email address into Multigo, and it will literally, they have the APIs for all these, for I think it's over 100.
Application programming interfaces. So what would you look for in those? I don't understand.
Well, no, they have the API. So basically what you do is you plug the email address into Multigo, and within one, like 2 seconds, maybe 5 seconds, it will search every single social media profile that they're hooked up into, and it'll show you their profile.
So
based
now,
off that email
now
address.
This is, anybody can get to this information, correct?
No, you. I mean, it's if you knew how expensive SocialNet was, no. Nobody, not everybody can get. But so I mean,
it's
but
not
I mean,
using it's Montego, not due to. It's due to money it's due to money and being able to afford it is the reason you can't get to it, right? But anybody could use these
like,
services.
Okay, so, like for example, using some of these more exotic add-ons in programs, yes, you have to pay money, but no, Montego is free and you can play around with it and you can find out so much without having any paid add-ons and anything like that. And at the Olympic thing, I was using just the free version of Montego with no add-ons, and we were absolutely finding so much. I would encourage anybody to go onto YouTube and search out Paterva or Montego.
We might have lost him because...
Sorry, I'm back.
Okay, I was going to say, we might have lost him because he's chasing somebody. Maybe he's on the run here.
Yeah, no, but yeah, so anybody, I would encourage them to go on YouTube and look up Paterva or Montego. You can download it and use it and have a lot of fun with it.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So now, wow, so this, you're building information about the person's physical and virtual things to connect them with. What's the next step? I mean,
well, okay. So like, let's say for example, they have a website. There's this tool I use. It's called Atomic Email Hunter. It's actually a marketing tool. And what it does is you can hook it up. Well, you can type in any website, and what this tool will do, and marketers use it, basically it will suck all of the, it'll like basically go through every single page on that website and suck out all the email addresses.
Mm-hmm.
So I use it as an offensive weapon. I'll target a website and I'll just within like, 30 seconds have all the email addresses that are on every single page on that website. I mean,
and
so then you
can
start
again.
Atomic Email Hunter.
Atomic Email.
It's actually made by, it's a Russian program.
It's finding them all over the world, huh?
Pretty much. Yeah. So you can use multiple tools,
So now you're looking for emails that are on a site, and then you start communicating with them, or you start looking for more places those emails are used to find more accounts and stuff. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, you just wash, rinse, repeat. I mean, you start the same process over again. You start looking on Google. You start, you just start querying things. You start searching out alternate, using Montego and using some more advanced programs. And then when I find the profile where I want it, like a social media profile, I use this program. It's called X1 Social Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I can basically target a Facebook page, and in like within a minute, it'll ingest every single post and all the information about that profile.
Even stuff that is hidden by the user that's private?
No, it's got to be public.
It's got to be public.
Now, but it archives it and it issues an MD5 hash to every single post,
mm-hmm.
and every single picture to create chain of custody for court.
Ah, now that's, you just hit the next step. You're now documenting all this with a chain of custody. So basically provable evidence in court of all these things, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the MD5 hash does. And I mean, if the other side wants to contest it, you can always hire a cyber expert to testify about the validity of the MD5 hash.
Uh-huh. So when you're hunting somebody down, you do all this information seeking, hunting on them, and then you get stuff that's provable to link them to, from their virtual identity, their virtual misdoings, whatever they're doing, to them as a person. And then that's what you do, collecting information, use it against them in court.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if it comes to that, yeah. I mean, this is like everything in a nutshell. I mean, there's more things that I do. There's more things that, open source intelligence analysts or collectors do. But, you know, I mean, this would be just like a basic, you know, process that would take, you know, 3-4 hours. I don't know, maybe not even that long, maybe more. It just depends.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what 10 years ago, your whole line of work wouldn't have been possible. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you could have used Google, but, you know, like Multigo, I think, wasn't even really out. I mean, Google was, you know, getting its feet under itself. And, you know, I mean, the internet was a different place 10 years ago. So yeah. It was a very different place.
And where do you think it's going to be at in the next 10 years?
Oh, man, I mean, the synthesis of data is happening at such a large rate. Uh-huh. You know, I also use for private investigations. I mean, I could use it with this. I have access to proprietary databases that basically, if I were to run a database on you, you'd be really scared. How much data they aggregate, public data they aggregate, and the algorithms that they use to connect people to you.
Oh, wow. So now all this information gathered on you, companies have all this. How does a person that is privacy conscious start to change something so that they're not a... I got some noise going on there. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm good. I'm sorry about that.
You're sneaking up on somebody again here.
Yeah, I know. No, I have my window shade to hide myself. I took it off.
Oh, yeah?
Anyway, sorry.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. okay. So if we're privacy conscious and we want to not be so findable or whatever you have going on, how would we do that?
Oh, man, that's a podcast in and of itself. Well, one of the first things that I would recommend is you got to clean up online. Get out a Proton Mail email account. Proton Mail is a Swiss email account,
mm-hmm.
and it's 100% encrypted. PGP, so you got to use PGP, pretty good privacy, created by Phil Zimmerman back in the 80s. They almost sent him to prison for creating it, but he sold it in a book. He sold the code in a book so that... so you wouldn't come to jail. And you got to clean up online. You got to get your email cleaned up. You got to make it a random email.
But you send an mm-hmm. email with that type of service, and it's going to go to all the other people you're sending it to that don't have that, correct?
Right.
So
yeah,
you're only protecting one way there, really.
No. Well, what the great thing about Proton Mail is you can give your friend a code, you could email them or you could text message them through Wickr, mm-hmm. which is another app I would suggest, an encrypted application for text messages, and you can actually text message them a password. And so it creates end-to-end encryption as long as they use that password, and then if they reply, the end-to-end encryption is also sustained.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd clean up the email. I'd clean up your social media. And if you really want to be private conscious, just get off of social media. Ditch your cell phone provider. Go to Walmart, buy a phone in cash. Throw it away every 3 months if you really want to be, you know, in freak out mode. But, I mean, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, you can go buy an iPhone at Walmart and just pay in cash every month for more minutes. You can't trace it. You can't track that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the biggest aggregator of data online, I think, is social media. If you think about it, Facebook is the largest database that the government or anyone has access to, and we did it voluntarily. No one made us do it.
So now, wait a minute. You just said that the government has access to.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, public data. I mean, you know, I mean, if the government, I mean, you know, the police, law enforcement, FBI, probably CIA. I don't know for sure.
But if I'm on NSA, Facebook, I mean, and I only share stuff with my friends, and I have private stuff that goes up with other people, and you know, nobody can get to that private stuff, right?
Well, whether or not the CIA or NSA has more access than anyone else, I don't know. That's if it is that secret, then I want to know about it. But I mean, I know that, you know, law enforcement and everybody else, the first thing they're going to do is hit someone's Facebook profile and see what they can see.
Mm-hmm.
Just the public stuff. And I know a lot of times people leave stuff out there, and you know, you can find out whose people's friends are, their drug network, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's I'm not saying that the government has access to private stuff. Maybe they do. Who knows? But I do know that government does target public profiles. Why wouldn't they? It's a smart thing to do. I mean, they'd be stupid not to.
Yeah, and I asked that just to see what you would say about that. As far as if we're looking down the road at what we think or should be put into the web to design this to be more, have more privacy. Say you want in the future for things to turn around, and what would be needed to do to get there?
Well, I don't think that we should regulate the internet. You know, I think that privacy is a choice. You know, no one makes us go on the internet. No one makes us put a Facebook profile up. Nobody makes us do anything. Privacy, I think, is a choice. And I think the more open that we keep the internet, the more free we keep the internet, you know, because it's a slippery slope. If we start, you know, regulating privacy and forcing these companies, you know, to do this and to do that, I think we run into a very slippery slope for one day. Somebody can have control of the internet and we will lose all of the things that we love about the internet. Not to mention this as well, you know, the internet is made up of a college of private corporations that have their own privacy models, like, you know, YouTube, Facebook. And so basically it's open market, or it's a capitalist based market, free market. So as a society, I think that we've created our own regulations, and if a company doesn't respect our privacy, they're not going to be in business very long.
So you don't think that there's something that could be looked at to make individuals more empowered with privacy? And
it's like most things in life, you have to learn it on your own.
Okay, so you think it's entirely and should be entirely user beware, buyer beware.
Yeah. You know, life is a risky sport. You might die from it.
That's true, I guess. You know, a lot of times now I use the example of when cars first hit the road. There was accidents and stuff because we didn't have a set of common best practices, we'll say, agreed upon gentlemen's agreement on how we handle the roads, which now has become all the road signs, the speed limits, the drive on the right-hand side of the road. How you navigate intersections, how those are arranged and how they're synchronized or whatever. But that common set of standards on how everything's used that might enable and help people to be able to more safely navigate, meaning have better privacy, doesn't really exist right now in the virtual world. How could we kind of put that together?
I would say I don't really think we should. You know, companies like Mozilla and Chrome. I'm sorry, browsers like Mozilla, Chrome. You know, they include some things. You know, I mean, there's so many articles. If people become privacy conscious, once again, the internet's its own best friend. There is no end to the research that you can do to become a private person. So, you know, there's what, 6 billion, maybe 7 billion people in the world. To educate everyone on privacy, I think, is a bit of a lofty goal. And I would rather not have restrictions on the internet and keep privacy an open game and leave it up to the individual user to go down that road themselves.
Interesting. But coming from somebody who is very savvy on it, that has spent a lot of time learning about it, your whole life's wrapped around that. You know, I hear a different story from people who are just like, you know, I want to be able to use the virtual world and be, you know, have my own privacy. And it seems like a, you know, there's a, you know, for you, you wrap everything around what you're doing. You're in the heat of it. But for the 99.99% of the population, they want to be safe out there without having to be an expert in this virtual and cyber world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say to that. I don't know what the government would come in and do.
I don't know. I definitely don't believe in it, that it's a government thing to do. I'm not with you on that one. I'm definitely with you on that one.
Yeah, I don't know how else it would be done. You know, I mean, people, people have to be responsible for themselves and the choices they make. And the internet is, I believe, you know, it's a utility. It's like getting, it's no different than turning on the water. And so when you get that utility and the Xfinity guy comes and hooks up your internet, every keystroke that you make and every click you make is a choice. And, you know, it's just like being out in the real world. And the great thing is that we do have laws. We're a, you know, a nation of laws. And, you know, you can't look at child pornography. You can't view pornography under the age of 18. You can't order alcohol online in some states. So, I mean, there is a ton of regulation, but as far as privacy goes, you know, I think the only way you can regulate privacy is through the government, and I'd rather not. I'd rather take the risk and protect myself from the government, you know, and take those extra measures as opposed to just leaving myself all open on Facebook, which, once again, I think is a choice because those people haven't taken the time to read Facebook's privacy policy or Facebook's privacy settings.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ton of privacy and security settings in Facebook. They even have pop-ups to show you how to be more secure.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, that's just my opinion.
So. Yeah. And I respect that. So kind of one last direction, one last question here. As far as, you know, we have the local economic development effort for cybersecurity. What recommendations would you make for somebody organizing that effort? How would this best be done?
Don't forget the offensive weapons, because I think a lot of times cybersecurity focuses on the defense. How do you stop the bad guys from getting in the castle?
Uh-huh.
But you gotta remember to put out, you know, a group of special forces guys out in the woods, scouting the enemy and, you know, sabotaging them. So don't forget the offensive weapons that are out there, because you can really have a paradigm shift in how you do cybersecurity if you use offensive weapons.
Offensive. So, interesting. So you're saying to empower the manufacturers, the designers, the developers of these as part of an ecosystem, to bring those in and focus on those as well as all the protection.
Yeah. Don't just focus on your firewall and Snort and all those other things. I mean, those things are all important, but, you know, you gotta hunt the hunters. You know, gotta hunt the hunters. I'm not talking about doing anything illegal, but I'm talking about don't forget the open source intelligence piece. Don't forget creating databases on bad actors. Don't forget mapping out where every time your firewall got hit, mapping out where it came from, doing intelligence research on what bad actors are in that geographic area. You have to have intelligence analysis as part of the cybersecurity cycle. So I guess that would be my recommendation.
Interesting. Well, thank you. That is definitely something I have not heard expressed before. So, Craig, thanks a lot. We will let you get back to your surveillance operation going on here right now. And we won't ask you what it is you're doing. But you have a good day, and thanks for joining our podcast today.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Sure. Bye.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.